everybody has seen the movie. We've all seen how God sends plagues upon the Egyptians. And most Christians learn about these plagues in Sunday school, but we learn them at the level of a story. And we don't necessarily think about what these things really mean.
What do you know about the plagues that appear in the book of Exodus? That's what we're going to talk about in today's episode of Grace in Focus. We have special guest David Renfro, an expert in Old Testament, in the studio with us today. And he's going to talk to us about the purpose of those plagues that we find in the story of Moses and the children of Israel. Let's go right to today's discussion with Sean Lazar and David Renfro.
Welcome to Grace in Focus Radio. My name is Sean Lazar, and today I have David Renfro, an Old Testament scholar who's writing a commentary on the book of Exodus. Hi, David.
Hi.
So tell us, who are you writing this commentary for?
It's for a group of people that want to create an in-depth commentary that will be on the internet, meaning it will not be published in a book that you go to the bookstore and buy. It'll go to a website, and you can do research on that passage, and then as you go through the passage, certain words and concepts will be connected to other topical things. And so I'm having a good time going through the book of Exodus.
Because you are an Old Testament guy. I've known you for a few years now, and you just love the Old Testament. You actually co-teach, or you were co-teaching a class with Dr. Eugene Merrill, one of the world's preeminent Old Testament scholars.
Correct.
At First Baptist Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Well, today I want to talk about Exodus with you, if that's okay.
Sure.
Almost everybody has seen the movie, right? We've all seen the movie. We've all seen how God sends plagues upon the Egyptians. And most Christians have learned about these plagues in Sunday school, but we learn them at the level of a story. And we don't necessarily think about what these things really mean, what people were supposed to recognize and know when it was happening. And so what I was hoping we can do is just talk about these 10 plagues, and you can tell us, kind of lead us into a deeper understanding of what is going on here. Is that all right?
That's fine.
All right. Well, so give us a little bit of background. Set up the story for us.
Okay. In the earlier chapters of the book of Exodus, Moses is confronted by the Lord, the famous burning bush story. Moses had been exiled out of Egypt after killing an Egyptian. He's out in the middle of nowhere. He spends 40 years in the middle of nowhere.
Wow.
Essentially being on the shelf. And then, at pretty much age 80, the Lord confronts him. And that's where the famous I am that I am in Exodus chapter 6 is found. Because when Moses wants to say, well, if I'm going to go back to Egypt and confront the Israelites, who do I tell him is telling me to do this?
Right. And so for the first time, God reveals his name.
His name.
Right.
It's his covenant name. There are many names in the Old Testament for God. The big one is, of course, in the very first verse of the Bible, Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, Elohim created the heavens and the earth.
Right.
But the word Elohim, and I take it that when the Bible uses one of these names, it's for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just kind of a haphazard, oh, I'll use this word this time for the sake of variety.
Right.
Elohim is the creator God, and that's the relationship that he has with his creation.
Okay.
He's creator, and we are the creation.
All right.
Doesn't sound like a lot of love there.
Right.
But there are other names that do have that kind of thing. There's El Elyon. There's El Shaddai. There's all of those other names and epithets in the Old Testament. And then in Exodus 6, there's one that is introduced by the Lord to Moses, and it's pronounced Yahweh. And Yahweh is, of course, the word Jehovah. Most people have heard the word Jehovah. That's kind of the English version of Yahweh.
Right.
In fact, Orthodox Jews will not use that word at all because
right.
they say it's holy. My idea is if it's good enough for Moses, it's good enough for me. So I'll use it.
And each of these names, you would say, kind of reveals something about God's character.
Yahweh is used in context where there is a relationship between God and man.
Right.
You could call it the covenant name for God. And so when he uses, and in fact, I've seen it in many passages, even in Exodus, where he'll use God in one verse, and then two verses later, he uses the Lord.
Right.
Well, why does he do that? And you have to ask those questions.
There's a theological reason.
There's a reason why he's using.
So God calls Moses out of this exile where he's tending a flock for 40 years after running away from Egypt, and he brings them back into Egypt. And this is the scene everybody knows from Charlton Heston and other and other movies, where he goes before Pharaoh and he cries out, "Let my people go." Mm-hmm. And Pharaoh refuses initially. And then we have this, God gives Pharaoh a reason to let Israel go, maybe 10 reasons. Mm-hmm. And let's go over those reasons. So the first thing, God sends 10 plagues. And the first plague is what?
The waters of the Nile. In fact, not only the waters of the Nile, but other waters in Egypt are miraculously turned into blood.
All right. So now what does that, now that we think about that and we think, okay, that's really gross and that's undrinkable now. And what, this is a big problem, but that's superficial. What does this mean theologically?
Theologically, first of all, every plague, just kind of by way of introduction, every plague targets a particular god or goddess that is worshipped in Egypt. They worshipped dozens, if not hundreds, of gods and goddesses. They worshipped the sun, the moon. Most civilizations back then worshipped natural forces.
Right. And so was the Nile a god?
The Nile was a god.
All right. So when,
because it was a life-giving. When the Nile flooded, it brought down sediment, which fed new crops. And therefore, the Nile was essentially a life giver. And by turning the water into blood, it was a life killer.
Oh, interesting.
Because it killed the marine life that was in the Nile River and surrounding waters. And that was the whole point, was that he is the Lord of nature. And after studying the plagues as much as I have, it's interesting to see that on a few of these plagues, the magicians that Pharaoh had reproduced the plague.
That's right.
But not all of them. And, but you know, well, there's something that none of them were able to do? Stop the plague.
Oh, that's right.
In fact, there are a couple of times that Pharaoh went to Moses and said, "Can you stop this plague?" And he says, "It'll stop tomorrow." Right. Okay. And guess what? It stopped the next day.
That's right.
And so none of those, none of the powers, non-God powers, were able to control when that plague stopped. Like, when do the locusts leave?
Right, right.
When do the lice go away? Who controls that?
Right. So that showed the Egyptians that God is sovereign.
He's the giver of life and death.
Right. And so he does what he wants, and you can't stop him. These Egyptian magicians, they could not stop.
They could not prevent it. Number one, prevent it or stop it.
But they could imitate it to a point, some of them.
That's correct.
Well, what does this tell us about God's character? So it tells us that he's sovereign. It tells us that this is a false god, right? The River Nile is a false god. You know, it is powerless before the Lord.
Right.
Right. All right. Well, let's think about the second plague now. This is the plague of frogs, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so tell us, why frogs? What was that about?
Frogs are, there is an Egyptian god that is represented by a frog. And this frog god controls a certain aspect of Egyptian life. And to flood everybody, including Pharaoh's own house, with all these frogs, once again, it shows that they have no control over this natural process.
Mm.
But Yahweh does.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the point was even made to Pharaoh that, oh, by the way, Pharaoh thought he was a god too.
That's right, yes.
And so he couldn't control it, as thinking that he was the god of all gods. He couldn't do anything about it because the frogs came into his private residence.
Right. What a
he
way
couldn't
to
control that.
What an amazing way to unmask his pretensions to divinity.
Absolutely.
Wow. So humbly. I mean, if you're to be Pharaoh in that situation, you have to realize my religion is false, wouldn't you think?
Well, you would think.
You know, at least that's what I would think.
Yeah. Keep in mind that he's not only trying to teach Egypt about his person and works, he's trying to teach Israel. Remember that Israel had been in Egypt for over 400 years, 430 years by some passages and later in the Bible. What happens? Do you think that their faith was pure to Yahweh during the 430 years?
Right. They must have started worshiping the Egyptian gods too, at least to a degree.
I think, this is my opinion, they were engaged in what is called syncretism. Mm-hmm. They still worshiped the Lord because there was a tradition passed down from generation to generation. But they were also, I think their faith was polluted by the surrounding world. For 400 years, the Lord didn't say anything to them. And yet they were inundated by messages about these gods and goddesses. So I think what they did was what the Israelites did later on when they did Baal worship along with worshiping Yahweh. They blended the two somehow and essentially polluted their faith in the Lord. It wasn't worshiping the Lord only. It was I don't think they ever denied that he existed or became atheistic or whatever. I think they blended their faith with this paganism and pantheism that we've seen all over the Bible, but especially now in Egypt.
Right. So these plagues not only teach the Egyptians, but they also kind of refute the idolatry that the Hebrews might have had in their worldview. In their
and the religion. Futility of worshiping that which is created.
Yes.
Israel needed to know that there is only one creator. And it's not a god or goddess of Egypt. You know, there was the goddess of childbirth. There's the god or goddess of, like the Nile is the life giver. It made the fields fertile, therefore it supported life. But really, it's the Lord that supports life. He is the one that supports life. And he needed to tell Israel the same thing, because in just a few chapters, when they're released, they're out in the wilderness. They don't have any water. They don't have any food. Who's going to provide for them? And they needed to know that the Lord himself is the provider. He's not only the deliverer, he's the provider for his people.
Well, David, that is a great thought, and I think we'll end there. And we're going to continue our discussion on the 10 plagues in tomorrow's episode. So stay tuned for tomorrow when I continue the discussion about the book of Exodus with David Renfro. Thanks for joining in, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thank you, gentlemen, for that great discussion on the plagues in Exodus. Would you like to explore more of the topics that we talk about on this show and don't know where to do it? Well, I'm going to tell you where. It's at faithalone.org. That's our website, faithalone.org. On the site, we have all kinds of free resources that are designed to help you grow and mature in your faith and your understanding of Scripture. For example, we have this beautifully laid out full-color magazine that you can get a free subscription. Just go to faithalone.org and sign up on the site. Would you like to become a financial partner with this show? Well, if so, you can find out how to do that on faithalone.org. All gifts are tax deductible and very much appreciated because it's how we stay on the air. By the way, we love to hear from our listeners. Maybe you've got a comment, feedback, or even a question. If you do, I'll give you our email address so that you can reach out to us. It's radio@faithalone.org. That's radio@faithalone.org. Next time on the program, we're going to have David Renfro back for one more session, so you can look forward to that. I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. And until next time, let's keep grace in focus.